Welcome in! Latest episode of that SEC podcast. I'm your host, Michael Braden. Go by SEC Mike on the Twitters. And there's our great friend, Stephen Lassen, senior editor over at Athlon Sports. Stephen, how are you after another wild week of college football?
Mike, I am fired up because we had another great weekend of college football, trying to make sense of all of it still here on Monday, and we got another great slate of games. Of course, we got the SEC's annual opponents, also trying to make sense of that, as I see the ACC is going to also expand to 9 conference games, but there is a catch at 17 teams. They can't do it equally, so one team will have to play 8 conference games. So,
oh my goodness, are you serious,
Mike? Just be. I guess all the cousins out there should appreciate the fact that the SEC keeps it nice and clean, because some of these other conferences with some of these other scheduling tactics just make my head hurt.
Oh my goodness, yeah, I didn't even know about that. So thank you for pointing the finger at ACC so we can laugh a little bit here before we get rolling. So much to get to. Let's dive right in. Well, wait, as always, though, we got to remind the folks, Stephen, we are brought to you by MyBookie, the online sports book. Go on, check them out. MyBookie.ag really, really, really helps the show. If you want to help the show, you haven't done it yet, not a requirement by any means, but if you want to help us out, go to mybookie.ag, sign up for an account, put in that promo code SEC. They're willing to give you a $500 guaranteed wager. What's that mean? It means let's say you put $200 in there, you lose that $200 on a wager. If you put in that promo code SEC, they're going to give you that $200 right back, so you can stay in the game over at MyBookie. And we're also brought to you by Tennessee Legend. We're going to drink some Legend, Stephen, as soon as Billy Napier gets the axe. Sam Pittman will be joining them. We're going to talk a lot about that. But thanks to our friends over at Tennessee Legend, official spirit sponsor of that SEC podcast. And go ahead, Stephen, please.
Was Trent Dilfer a Tennessee Legend this Saturday, taking pictures over there on the sideline like he's a tourist?
How did that man not get fired that moment? I'll never know. But, yeah, hopefully while he was leaving the state in disgrace, driving back to Alabama, he got him some Tennessee Legend. I'll tell you that. Another legend, Legend Junior. He gave us 5 memberships, Steven. So shout out Tolga. I'm not even going to try that last name. Tolga, welcome. Jimmy 6330. Come on. These are some wild names. Tampa Rebel, Robert Azevedo, and A.E. Tiger. Welcome to
the family.
Courtesy of the Legend Junior. We appreciate you. And then the other, we got a couple more legends here, Stephen. We got JR, the most legend of legend.
Legend, cousin JR has done it again.
Thank you, JR. He has gifted a membership to Kim Burn. Kim Burn, welcome to
the family.
Yeah. And then, oh man, he's in the fields right now, Stephen, because it is Alabama, Georgia week. We're going to talk a lot about that. But we love Stevens around here. Thank you, Stephen Up.
Always showing up for them boys in Tuscaloosa. It's Stephen Up. Roll Tide.
Thank you, Stephen Up. He gifted memberships to Mitchell Jackson, Negative FX, Travis Rogers, Bro Regard, what a name, and Jack. Jack, welcome to
the family.
Oh, no, Stephen, and not to be outdone. I was about to pick Alabama for Stephen Up, but he has been outdone by JR.
The legend, cousin JR, has done it again.
10 members. Oh, my goodness. We got us a Georgia-Alabama feud in the comments here, Stephen. So shout out, legend JR. Serial killer. What a name. DB Hinton, JD Cal, the hog father. Danny B, Josh Myers, Sokram, we appreciate you. Justin Sanders, Michael Sepla, Nintendad. I like that name too. Mark, Candles Don't Lie. Oh, wait, no, Candles Don't Lie is someone else. But 10 memberships. Welcome to
the family.
Yeah, no. Man, they're coming in, Steven. Ooh. I can't even keep up. Shout out Austin Wayne. He's the one that gifted to. Man, I just had it here. Austin Mech gifted to. Here we go. Candles don't lie. Candles, welcome to
family.
And then Carl Junkins, he gifted to Mark, and Ashley Schaefer gifted to Hustlenomics. Hustle and Mark, welcome to
the family.
What if we just did this for 3 hours? All right. Michael Riley, appreciate you. Why does God hate the Gators? Well, we can get into that, too, when we get to the panic meter. But we got a lot to cover here, Stephen. We're already 6 minutes in. Tell me, Stephen, how illegal was this? Should Oklahoma be kicked out of the SEC with all this shenanigans, or is this much ado about nothing, and Auburn fans can't take being got like it got on Saturday?
Oh, shoot, Mike. What are we? The ACC needed another member to get that schedule balance? There it is. That's right. Auburn going to vote to kick Oklahoma out, send them to the ACC. They can fix their scheduling. Mike, man, I think
we've got us a battle. I mean, again, we have weekly battles in the SEC, but right now I think the number one battle is Oklahoma versus Auburn. They're at each other's throats. The Oklahoma's is just got the middle finger to the entire SEC, and I think everybody not named Auburn is kind of laughing at the whole situation. But what's your take on first of all? I mean, here's the real downer of this whole thing, Stephen. It was a hell of a game. And both these teams, I think, are coming out of it looking more promising. Yet the big talking point, unfortunately, is the officiating. What was your take on this awesome game,
Mike? I think the first thing is we got to go back and talk to the SEC office in Birmingham, and we got to redo these annual opponents, and we got to get Auburn and Oklahoma on the slate because they played twice as SEC members, and they both have been fantastic games. So we had the Kip Six last time. And we got this kind of crazy little fiasco involving a touchdown. Also, Mike, I don't know if you remember this. There was a play that Vanderbilt ran that was kind of similar, like back in 2015. Like it was called Sneaky Pete. Like Andy Ludwig ran it against Kentucky. Like the guy was kind of crouching by the sideline and they scored a touchdown off of it. So not the first time that the SEC has kind of seen something like this. I think this comes back to like showing how big of a deal it is that the SEC put out that statement. Like normally like officiating things, you don't really see kind of that kind of a thing. Like it was a thing this time. I think just in terms of the game, like if you just, that happened, and if it didn't happen, sequencing of the game could be different. Like you don't know what's going to happen after that. But I always think about too, in a game where there's 100 different plays and outcomes and things that could happen, just that one thing did not swing the game one way or the other. I mean, Auburn could make a field goal, and we're talking about having to get something different at the end of the game. Jackson Arnold could not count to 10 Mississippi in the end zone to try to throw the ball. I mean, there's several different things that could happen. So, I mean, I think Auburn fans certainly have a right to be upset about the way the play was officiated, but there's also 100 other things that happened in the game that could have gone differently. They could have done differently, and that could have changed the outcome as well. So in general, I am worried about officiating across college football. And I think Saturday's play here is a good example of why you should be worried.
Yeah. And what's your thoughts? There was so much discussion on Jackson Arnold going into this football game. And here we are yet again saying, okay, he made some plays, both with his arm and his feet. He extended some drives with his feet. He missed some touchdowns. And then on the flip side, you can say, well, hell, he got sacked 10, 11. I think officially they're saying 9 now. They change the number by the day. But, I mean, who in the hell could have a great day when you're getting harassed to that caliber? But some of that is on him for holding the ball for too long, like you said. What do you take away from this game simply in terms of Jackson Arnold?
Let me ask you this about Jackson Arnold. Do you think that, I mean, obviously coming out of high school, he was one of the top quarterback recruits in the country. I think there's a chance that what we've seen so far through the first four games might just be the Jackson Arnold that we get the rest of the year. Is that fair?
Yeah, I mean, at some point he is what he is, right?
Right, and that's kind of what I think we're at with Arnold. I think he can certainly play better. You mentioned like there were a couple throws that, you know, I think it's, you make those, we're talking maybe a little different outcome here, you know, consistency from down to down. And also within that, when you're getting, you know, harassed by a defensive line of the caliber of Oklahoma to the 9 sacks and all the pressure that he faced, there, you know, within that, it's not all of his fault. But I think at some point, when he played Baylor, his legs were valuable. I think we've seen through the air, he hasn't had a turnover yet, but he's also missed some throws. So the numbers, almost 70% completion rate, no interceptions. You like to see that, but I think you kind of question, like, what exactly is the upside? If he's solid, you know, that's probably like an 8-win kind of team for Auburn. But I think in order for this team to kind of rebound from this, make a run at the playoff, I think he's going to have to find another level. Is that fair?
Oh, yeah. No, I think so. And they got to figure out how to protect him and not get 10 sacks in game right. two. So that is an issue. What about flip side? What about Oklahoma, Steven? Any concern that, again, this is the best defense we faced to date. And again, the questionable calls aside, Auburn had 13 penalties in the game. They had opportunities. And again, you couldn't run on this team. I'm looking it up, 32 rushing yards. I mean, that's not great. 3 of 12 on third downs. Now, nobody gives a damn because you win the game and you move on to the next week. But is there any maybe not cause for concern, but just, you know, that maybe we should pump the brakes a little bit on this being like the best team in the SEC, or is that, or are they perhaps?
I, to go back to Auburn for a second, I do think my opinion of Auburn probably maybe improved on this team a little bit. I mean, it was a good showing in a tough environment at Oklahoma. So I probably upgraded them a few points in the power rankings. I don't know that it was fair they dropped out of the rankings, you know, now that we're 2 days out from the game. I think on Oklahoma, I think that there's kind of, it's kind of a bad answer for you, but I think Mateer plus defense can carry you a long way. But I also think the flip side of that is, we've seen them play two good opponents in Michigan and Auburn, and neither victory were, you know, 100% perfect. There's a lot of room for this team to grow and improve upon. But I also think there is, at least for me, a concern about over-reliance on Mateer, because what if he gets hurt? You know, we 32 rushing yards against Auburn. Texas coming up in a few weeks has a better defensive front than Auburn does. Looking at their schedule, I mean, LSU later in the season, Tennessee, there is some toss-up games there that, you know, Alabama, Tennessee on the road. I mean, the schedule gets harder in SEC play with the road trip. So I think there's got to be a way to say that they can lean on Mateer and defense to win those games. But I can also see that there is too much reliance on Mateer, and they're going to have to find some offensive balance from some of the other guys around them if they want to win the SEC. So I still have Oklahoma as a projected playoff team. But I do worry about being too quarterback dependent, because I think you're going to need some other guys to step up to be able to get to Atlanta this year.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, but you know, it's always great when one of these games lives up to the hype, and I certainly think it did with Auburn taking the late lead, with Oklahoma having to match it, and then that great defense having to close the game in the fashion they did. So Oklahoma, despite everything I just said prior to this, they checked a lot of boxes, and that's all. I mean, Brent Venables, there's a lot of haters out there for him. He's undefeated against the state of Alabama now, Stephen. 3-0. Credit Brent Venables for that. Two of the mightiest programs in this conference cannot beat Brent Venables at Oklahoma. So if nothing else, he's probably maybe the most hated man in the state of Alabama right now. And
outside, you know, of Diego Pavia. Right.
And he probably don't give a damn it one way or another. You know what?
Well, I think, right. And I think it's also gives, you know, we talked about Auburn and maybe approving like a few points in the power rankings. I mean, we came into the season with all these questions about Oklahoma. How is Mateer going to fit into the SEC? What about the receivers? I mean, Satanga stepped up. Javonnie Gibson's on his way back. Deion Burks is playing well. Jaron Kanak looks like one of the best tight ends so far, receiving-wise, in the SEC. So I think, you know, for a coach that came into the year on the hot seat to be sitting here at 4-0, wins over Michigan, wins over Auburn, sitting in the top 10, a realistic chance to be a playoff team, says a lot about the job that Brent Venables has done this year. And certainly, there's 8 games to go. There's a long way this season. But I think you're feeling better if you're Oklahoma, certainly after the start to the season.
Yeah, I would agree with that. Now, I'll tell you, Stephen, who not feeling better South Carolina, come on, Missouri. They are, though, feeling great. 29-20 win over the weekend, and this shall forever be known as the trucking, I guess, if you call it that, the Ahmad Hardy show with 285 rushing yards for Mizzou, -9 for South Carolina. You're not going to win many games in this conference with a -9 rushing total. Thoughts on this? This was a big boy matchup, Stephen. I thought Carolina had their backs against the wall. I thought they'd play their best football of the year. I think they did that, but still was not close to enough to handle Missouri on the road. Big win for Missouri, and man, they're rolling on their way to a almost assured 5-0 start.
I don't want to, you know, tip our hand on the prediction show, but yeah, I think they're going to take care of business against UMass this weekend. No, I think to your point, like line of scrimmage, and I think about that, you know, Missouri, we know Caden Green, they've had some issues in pass protection this year, but to be able to bulldoze South Carolina's defense for 285 yards, Hardy and Roberts, I mean, it's like two tanks coming at you for four quarters is a pretty big deal with the way that they've played this year. And then I thought for South Carolina, we would see, it was great, first of all, to see Sellers play and also to play probably his best ball of the season. I mean, that was one of the reasons why they were able to hang around in this game, despite not having any rushing attack, was Sellers and the receivers hitting some of those big plays. And I think I counted on Sellers that maybe 10 of his 18 or 12 of the 18 completions went for more than 10 yards. So there was a lot of big plays that he was able to generate despite kind of being a one-man offense. But I think much like Oklahoma, that's my biggest concern right now with South Carolina. Coming into the year, we knew Sellers was great. We knew that he could carry this team a good ways, but also there are some limitations to that. It is a line of scrimmage league. You got to be able to still stop the run and be able to run the ball. And in this game, South Carolina couldn't. The schedule is only going to get harder from here too. So Shane Beamer's teams have gotten better. The schedule gets harder from here. So it'll be interesting to see kind of how those two ideas clash as we go forward this season.
Yeah, but what do they always do, Steven? Again, I mean, if nothing else, we got to hang our hat on. We get better as the season marches on. And I think they were 2-3 or something like that last year. They, you know, they were really in the dumps. Season looked over and they did turn it around. So they have that in them. But yeah, it's looking pretty gloomy. And we'll talk Kentucky coming up. But buddy, talk about a must win. That's a huge one for the Gamecocks here. What about Missouri, though, Stephen? Bo Prabula, again, they didn't even need his best performance. This was by far probably his, I think it's fair to say his worst performance of the season. But again, maybe that's not the right word, but because he's just been outstanding. So they didn't even need it in his first conference game. And not that he was horrible. He just had the one pick. He did have a touchdown. But it was really the running game that won the day for Missouri. And they're heating up at the right time. You know, fans are upset with the pass defense, which I get. And any thoughts on Caden Green, who it sounds like he may be out 3 to 5 weeks, according to Drink, said this after the game. So I don't know a definitive timeline for his return, but that would make it seem likely he's going to miss Alabama, maybe Auburn. Can Missouri manage those games without him?
That's a great question. And I think it's fair to say Alabama, Auburn, probably a little better up front than South Carolina this year, we think. So, yeah, I mean, I think how the offensive line holds up. I mean, Alabama struggled to stop Florida State in week one on the ground, and they're going to get Hardy and Roberts. So they're going to have their hands full. And I would agree with you, like on Prabula. Like, I thought he was fine, and that's not like a knock on him. But also, I think maybe that shows how versatile this Missouri team is. Like, they can beat you. If Prabula needs to throw it more, then they can do that. If they need to lean on the ground, they can. The secondary, I think, you know, it's going to get Ty Simpson coming up. There are going to be some other games that are going to be tested. Like, that could be an area to watch. Now, the flip side is I think their pass rush could probably come alive and maybe take care of some of those secondary concerns. I do think, and this is kind of a big picture thought, like when you're facing South Carolina or any other quarterback. And, you know, I mentioned a lot of those completions for South Carolina were like big plays. And sometimes it's like, if that's all they got and you're going to let take their chance of throwing 20 yards downfield, if they're going to hit them, tip your cap and say, congrats, you hit those, but you'll take their chances here. And if you're able to run the ball like that and get that consistent play out of Prabula, I mean, how many times this year has Missouri had a 99-yard touchdown drive? That's pretty dang good. Right. I think you're feeling pretty good if you're Missouri right now to be sitting here at 4-0, soon to be 5-0, going into that game against Alabama.
Right, and one of Carolina's big plays was when they caught Missouri offsides and they took a shot. So, again, it's not like that didn't happen, but how many times are you going to catch us offsides and throw us over the top? You know what I mean? It was a true, you know, just winging it ball, and that's what they came down, and now the stats are affected. What's your thoughts on this? I'm curious. I have it listed at South Carolina missed 16 tackles in this game. So is that more on a defense for lack of execution and tackling, or is that more on an offense for having elite runners, or is maybe the answer somewhere in between?
The answer is probably in between. I have to go back and look the stat up, Mike, but I know Hardy last year yards after contact was one of the best running backs in college football, and I'm sure he's up there this year. If he's not number one in the country, he's probably number one in the SEC. I do think we probably should make a note of Prabula's legs, because there was a couple times on third down where it's like he could get hemmed in, he could get sacked, and he was able to escape. So, like, we talk about versatility. Maybe if the passing game isn't there, your quarterback's able to convert some on some of those third downs, short yardage, Hardy and Roberts kind of, you know, pushing forward. So I do think some of that is like, yeah, South Carolina's got to be better, but also I think Hardy and Roberts are just tanks that are going to be hard to stop on one-on-one situations sometimes.
Mm-hmm. Well, credit you, Steven, for yet another accurate prediction. Shane and I are idiots, in case you don't know. Steven had Miami beating Florida, and beat them ever, did they, Steven? Oh, Lordy, Lord, watching this offense. We'll get to them on the panic meter, but takeaway from this, maybe it wasn't as lopsided as this final score indicated. At least that's what I'm going to tell myself at night. But, you know, Florida had their opportunities, even though they could barely move the ball in this football game. But thoughts on this stinky, stinky offense, and they got, you know, a bye week to figure it out. But thoughts on Florida losing lopsided to Miami?
Mike, I think maybe the simplest way to sum this game up was Miami won in the trenches. They won rushing the ball 184 yards to 80. They also got 4 sacks and 7 tackles for a loss. There was a lot of pressure, too. They probably didn't get sacks or tackles for a loss for Miami in that game. So that's where the game was won or lost for me. It's line of scrimmage. There's a lot of things about this offense we could get into in the panic meter that just aren't adding up yet. And big picture wise, I mean, I will tell you that I had two feelings in that game. One is there was a point in the second quarter, I was like, Miami could win this game like 10 to nothing or 9 to nothing. I mean, they don't need to do anything offensively. And then Florida came out in the second half and went right down the field. And I'm like, where's this offense been for the last three games in the first half? And to see that drive compared with the rest of the season, something's just not adding up here. So it felt like everything was really hard against this Miami team. And Miami is very good, but line of scrimmage, a ineffective offense, an offense that pretty much didn't threaten to score 10 points in this game, says a lot about where Florida is right now.
Yeah, and I probably should have said this as well, Steven, but there's been reports out of Gainesville. The first place I saw it was Swamp 24/7 that DJ Lagway spotted in a boot on campus today. So Florida's got a bye, and they're also reporting that they anticipate he's going to be available for Florida's next game against Texas, but not a great sign. Either he got injured against Miami, or maybe that's never healed up. There's nothing positive here, but what's your thoughts on hearing that DJ Lagway allegedly, reportedly is seen spotted in a walking boot?
I think it's pretty concerning, given that he looks like a quarterback who's pretty rusty right now. And I think he needs all of the reps, all of the time to work with his receivers over the next 2 weeks or so. in order to try to break out of this offensive funk before they get to Texas. And I mean, Texas is, it's going to be a hard matchup. I mean, for all the issues that Texas has had offensively, we know one constant right now with Texas, and they can play good defense. So I think given what we've seen so far, he looks like a quarterback who missed most of the offseason, looks very rusty, and this can only add to it if he's forced to miss some time before this big game against Texas.
Hey, great question here from Stephen Up. Who's the better play caller, Mike Shula or Billy Napier?
Probably Napier, I guess. I guess if we go back to Louisiana, he was pretty effective there, right?
How about, I mean, maybe we could trade him one for one, you know, but even that, I don't know that either side would sign off on that, but both are so desperate to see their guy go, they probably would, you know what?
Man, it seems like Billy's only card that he has left, and you're right, I mean, both sides, I think, are pretty frustrated. As much respect as I have for Shane Beamer and building his programs, I really have not understood any of his offensive coordinator hires. And that has to be pretty frustrating, because here you are, may have the number one pick in the NFL draft, and you're just kind of, you know, pretty average, if that, on offense. But I have wondered, you know, this is a bye week for Florida. And, you know, if you're Billy Napier, you scored 7 points, you scored 2 touchdowns combined in the games against South Florida and LSU. I mean, if you take out the Long Island game, it's pretty grim on offense. And so you've got 2 weeks. Why not hand off the play calling duties? You know, in an effort to spark the team, you can see the press release right now. I'm going to hand over play calling duties to spend more time in the quarterback room, or however you want to word it. That's kind of the last card that Napier could play. So I guess maybe he's going down with the ship, knowing what he does best, or he just doesn't feel good about someone else taking on play calling duties. Either way, it's not a good situation for Florida.
No, it is not. And speaking of a bad situation, Stephen, again, shout out the College Football Encyclopedia. He said this one would be close. I laughed it off, Stephen. And it was too close. Memphis beats Arkansas. Oh, no. Stephen, we were perfect in the red zone until that Mike Washington fumble doomed us here in Fayetteville. But, man, thoughts on Memphis squeaking out a win over a mighty Arkansas. I had a Memphis fan email me this morning, Stephen, true story. He said, how much can I pay you so I don't ever have to hear your voice again? And he just sent me a clip of Memphis scoring on Arkansas and celebrating. And I said, no need. Save your money. You're going to need it for the Gasparilla Bowl, because I hear those tickets are expensive. But thoughts on Memphis getting this win?
Mike, how ironic. I had Memphis projected to the Gasparilla Bowl this week. So,
of course.
Yeah, shout out to Stephen's bowl projections this week. I hate to say this, Mike, but it's like, here we go again. Arkansas in the first half looks like they're on the doorstep of a nice win, up 28-10. Offense is kind of humming along. Maybe some missed opportunities there to put Memphis away. And then what we saw in the second half, the offense kind of went cold. Defense can't get a stop. You're in a situation where if you're Arkansas at this point, you know you pretty much have to score almost every time you touch the ball. And then there was the heartbreaking turnover at the end of the game for the second week in a row. And it just feels like the same thing over and over under Sam Pittman. They are so close to a win. I think back last year to like Oklahoma State, think back to last week against Ole Miss. This tenure for Sam Pittman could look a lot different if they could find a way to win these one score games. So falling short again, it just kind of felt like much of the same for Arkansas. You know, the offense was great, but again, the defense is just a major, major issue right now.
Mm-hmm. And I mean, I think you hit on something important there. I think it's just, it doesn't excuse the errors, but there's just so much pressure on Arkansas to score. Now, scoring 3 points in the second half against Memphis, that's inexcusable. That's was due in, you know, to the fumble there at the end, Mike Washington. Talen Green had an interception in the red zone. That didn't help. So you correct those things, you easily potentially win this football game. But, you know, we could, what if literally every game and every team here. So, I mean, the defense is atrocious. I think it's the worst defense in the conference by a country mile. And man, you got to get things cleaned up, and they're running out of time, and the schedule's getting more difficult. This is the easy portion of your schedule. So I don't know where we go from here, but I don't think it's looking too pretty here.
Mike, should Arkansas really be needing to count on not fumbling in the last couple minutes to beat Memphis? I don't mean that it's like disrespect to Memphis because they are a good G5 team, but shouldn't Arkansas be able to go in there and just take care of business?
You would think.
Yeah. And not to mention, I mean, late in the game, Memphis had a 5-play, 75-yard touchdown drive. They had a 4-play, 94-yard touchdown drive. Also, their backup quarterback came in and carried half the defense past the first down marker. I mean, tackling, I saw some effort that kind of worried me on a couple of those plays.
Right.
I mean, they're going to have to win every game. They pretty much, I think you have to pencil in. They've got to get to 34, 35 points at this point to probably win every game. And that may not be enough.
And it's not like they're playing, you know, Joe Burrow, LSU. You know, this was, I even texted Steven during this game. I was like, shout out you. You said this quarterback is not really going to threaten you much with his arm. I mean, I thought he was awful. I think his name's Lewis.
Yeah.
I'm sure he's a nice guy. But not a great passing quarterback. And yet we can't even slow down the offense with an ineffective, largely ineffective quarterback here. That is a horrible, horrible sign. Going back into conference play after this Notre Dame. And by the way, Steven will know better than I. Notre Dame, what are they best at? Running the football. So good luck stopping them now. You know what?
290 rushing yards allowed to a Memphis team that had a revamped offensive line and also an offense that's way more one-dimensional than it was last season. This is Memphis. Like, if you watch Memphis last year, you may remember Seth Hennigan. He was there for like 72 years. He was in the NFL this preseason. He was a much better passer. They had better balance. That's not the case this year. Memphis just ran for 290. Here comes Jeremiah Love in this Notre Dame backfield. So Arkansas is going to have its hands full even more this week.
Yeah. Well, anything else stand out from the weekend before we jump into the panic meter, Steven?
Mike, I think the other game that stood out to me, and this is kind of a, you know, was the two Mississippi schools games. So I guess Ole Miss taking care of business against a good Tulane team. Also, Mississippi State, and you may laugh at me, 38-10. I think this is a big deal. Because Northern Illinois tried to drag Mississippi State into the game that they wanted to play. Low possession, run the ball, play defense. Things kind of weren't going Mississippi State's way early, and then they shut down Northern Illinois and took control in the second half. And a game where Blake Shapen really didn't put up big numbers. It was defense and run the ball for Mississippi State. So I love what we're seeing out of this team, like the versatility with their winning. It's Shapen's big plays against Arizona State. If they need to lean on a much improved defense and run game, they've been able to do that so far.
Yeah, and it sets up some terrific matchups upcoming in that state, both the home teams too. So that's going to be quite interesting. But I was pretty confident Ole Miss would beat Tulane. I didn't think they'd beat them the drum they did. And I was very disappointed in how Tulane's offense. Now, that's a credit to Ole Miss defense, perhaps, but I was very disappointed with this Tulane offense in this football game.
Yeah, I think it's a credit to the Ole Miss defense. I mean, Ole Miss defensively has had some issues against the run this year. Like, if you just, like, statistically, they're one of the lower rated rush defenses in the SEC. So the fact that Tulane was able to run for about 178 yards wasn't a total surprise, but I was more stunned that the game wasn't closer early on. Like, I thought just coming off the two wins against Northwestern and Duke, Tulane would be able to stay within striking distance. So it's a credit to maybe this Ole Miss team. A lot of new faces. Each week in the season, maybe they're just getting a little bit better, and maybe especially on the defensive side of the ball too.
Yeah. So any other action over the weekend that you wanted to highlight?
Texas.
Arch is back.
That's right. I was watching that game, Mike, and I was thinking, man, this is the Arch Manning that I thought we would see at the start of the season. Just playing with a lot more energy, playing a lot more passion. You know, I don't want to read too much into it at Sam Houston State, but it was a good step forward for Texas and building some confidence before Texas goes on the road and plays Florida here in a couple weeks.
Any concern that I know this has kind of been referenced at points during the offseason, but we kind of forget those narratives just because of how inconsistent, maybe is the word that the offense has looked, that we're going into 8 consecutive conference games to close it out. Is that a concern at all for you for Texas?
Yeah, I think, I mean, the schedule is going to get harder from here. I think we should also acknowledge, too, about Ohio State. I think Ohio State's good, but they really haven't been tested since they played Texas. And Texas has played San Jose State, UTEP, and Sam Houston. And this is kind of like the LSU thing with Clemson. How good is Clemson? They're 1-3. I mean, Dabo probably thinks they're 4-0 and, you know, A-plus after his grading system this year. But you're going against, you know, 8 straight SEC opponents and, you know, an early bye week during the season. You get a bye week late before you play Georgia. Yeah, I could see that. We're still at the point of the season where we're still learning something about these teams. And I think that's what has me very interested for Florida and Oklahoma coming up for Texas to just see what kind of progress they've made since Ohio State.
Right. All right. Is it time, Stephen, to get into the panic meter?
It is. Can we start with Texas?
Of course.
Taking the victory lap here. For the Arch Manning haters, your panic is at 7. Arch is back. You saw him out there, Mike. He was talking trash. He was telling Sam Houston's defense they're too small. They can't keep up with him. In all seriousness, it is Sam Houston. So a little bit of context that the performance came against one of the worst teams in the country. But I think if you're Texas, and I think if you're Arch Manning and Sarkisian, that was what you wanted to see coming off of the kind of sluggish game against UTEP where he wasn't very good, and then coming to SEC play. I did find it interesting. So Chase Daniel was on the call for the game, and I thought, you know, he put this out on his Twitter account that he watched every throw that Arch did leading up to Saturday and talked, I think, to the Texas staff and Arch, and basically said, like, all the talent's there. It's just got to click at some point. And so it gets back to the idea that I think Texas has been pressing too much on offense. And on Saturday, kind of felt like they were loose. They were having fun. It is Sam Houston, so I don't want to read too much into it. But I do think that maybe a little bit of pressure off the shoulders, get some good vibes going, gives them a chance to maybe right the ship offensively as they play Florida and then the big one against Oklahoma.
Yeah, and I don't know this for a fact, Stephen, but I've heard that Sarkisian removed the cameras from the restrooms. So I think that's why they were loose. I think that's why they were geared up and why they played hard for him this weekend. So shout out Texas. If this is the Arch we're getting for the rest of the year, I think the rest of the league could be in massive trouble. You know what?
For Texas to pair a elite defense with an offense that is capable of putting up 30 points a game or so, this is the Texas team that we thought could be a national championship contender. It is Sam Houston. They're one of the worst 10 teams in the country right now, but I think that's a very, very positive sign for Texas. A lot to grow on.
And what is truly funny, Stephen, is all this Arch hoopla. I know the Texas fans are well aware, but I feel like nobody else is paying attention to what could quite possibly be the best defense in the country. But again, no one's really cared or paid attention because it's all Sarkisian's nonsense and Arch not quite living up to the expectations yet. Is that fair?
Yeah, 100%. I mean, Texas is giving up 3.6 yards per play. Oklahoma's not too far behind. I mean, it's funny. We're talking, you know, some early Red River here. But to think about what could happen when Arch and Mateer are on the same field, and really it could be like a 13-10 rock fight between two of the best defenses in the country. But it's not just per play. I mean, Texas has only, you know, given up, what, 31 points in its first 3 games. Now, certainly the competition in the last couple of weeks has been a question, but still, you're not giving up a lot of yards. You're not giving up big plays. You're not giving up points. This defense has lived up to the hype this year.
Mm-hmm. All right, on a serious note, who is really on the panic meter here, Stephen?
Let's go back to Florida, Mike. And my panic meter has been at 10. for the last 2 weeks, and it is staying right there. And in fact, if it could go higher, it would. I was watching that game on Saturday, Mike, and you can tell me if I'm crazy. I'm sitting here thinking, DJ Lagway is one of the most talented quarterbacks in the country. Jaden Baugh is one of the best running backs in the SEC. They're supposed to have one of the best offensive lines. The receiving core is good. What is missing here?
I think it's, unfortunately, I think it's this man right here.
Yeah, I think that's spot on. It's a less than effective DJ Lagway right now.
Mm-hmm.
And you just, Mike, you just look at what they're doing against FBS teams. So take out the Long Island game, 11 points a game, 4.5 yards per play. This is against FBS competition. So this includes South Florida. Also, Lagway is 16th in the SEC in quarterback rating. They have one play of 30 plus yards against the FBS. Ole Miss has 21. Mike, this offense is I was going to say disaster. It might be a little too harsh. They're struggling. And we talked about it last year after they lost to Miami and Texas A&M. Kind of feels like we're getting to that point that it really might be the end for Billy Napier here soon.
Mm-hmm. And we were discussing this off air, just when would be an appropriate time to let him go. I mean, there's pros and cons. You got to remember the redshirt rule. You got to know, the transfer portal is an option. He has proven previously that he can turn a situation like this around. Maybe not quite this dire, but they have certainly turned around on the defensive side of the football. Maybe you could spin it that way. And if they can manufacture just 20 points per game, my goodness, Steven, they can beat South Florida. They would have beat LSU because, again, 10 of that came off basically offensive mistakes. So I don't know. There's something in there, but yeah, I mean, this is, you can't even get Florida fans. I mean, they could be 3-1. If their offense looked this bad and their record was 3-1, I'd still think they'd want them fired because that brand of football is just, no one's signing off for that in Gainesville.
I mean, think about Florida since like 1990 something. And your first thought is, oh, it's Spurrier. It's Fun and Gun. It's Urban Meyer, it's Tebow, it's Percy Harvin, it's all these fun offenses. It's not offenses that make the 1990s NFL offenses, feel right at home with how boring they are at times. I mean, in the most generous interpretation on Florida here, if Lagway starts to play better, they can maybe pick off Mississippi State, Kentucky, maybe they get Tennessee and Florida State at home. And, I think they may need one more upset in there somewhere. I mean, scraping together 6 wins is not exactly the standard here at Florida. And so I think in terms of timing, the portal now looks like it's going to be a January thing. It was passed last week. The final dates on it aren't exactly clear yet. But if it's a January thing and Florida's played 4 games, one more, and most of the team can't redshirt once they've had 5. I mean, it could come at any minute. I think you want to be able to have the time to do an extended search before you need to have a staff and recruit your high school players. But you're probably looking at later in October or even November. I think the danger would be if the bottom falls out, like it did at Virginia Tech and UCLA. And I think that's not quite the case yet with Florida and Arkansas. As bad as it's been, it's not as bad as it could be. And that's probably helping to save the jobs of Pittman and Napier right now.
Yeah. Well, how about if I just take the alternative, though? We got DJ Lagway reportedly in a boot. He'll have 2 weeks to prepare for Texas, although we just got done glazing Texas elite off defense. So this may not make any sense, but what if the time off, the thing that I routinely hear from people that have studied DJ Lagway this year, they all say like his footwork is like a travesty right now. He's not confident back there. I think it's safe to assume he's injured to what degree, I don't know, but what if the time off heals whatever is ailing him? And I'm not sure that it will, but if it does, let's say he gets his, if nothing else, he gets his footwork corrected and he gets his confidence. I'm not asking you to say that, you know, they'll go 9-3 or something like that, but could they be competitive? Again, the defense is playing really, really well. If we can fix DJ Lagway, is there hope that this season can be salvaged?
I think so. I think that's taking a pretty big leap on my part, though. And I think there's two things with that. I think it's unfortunate what's happened to the offense, because you're right, the defense has looked good. And this was an issue the first half of last year before they turned it around in the last, you know, 4 or 5 games or so. Offensively, I think they're going to have to take a massive step forward. And it really goes back to Lagway looking like the quarterback we saw late in the season last year. I do think some of it is timing. Like, it does seem like sometimes he's maybe sailing some of his throws a little bit. So it could be footwork. It could be timing. Is 2 weeks off enough to get healthy and get in rhythm? And I guess Dallas Wilson might be back for the Texas game too. So you're getting healthier around your quarterback. Like, I could talk myself into Florida being better offensively the rest of the way, but is 6-6, 7-5 really the standard that this team should be aiming for? I mean, if this is a program that should be able to compete for playoff appearances on a pretty regular basis, I would say. Is that fair?
I think he just needs more time.
6-year plan, right?
Yeah. You know who would agree with that? Mr. Sip, who just gifted a membership to Cash Me Outside. Cash Me. Welcome to
the family.
Mr. Sip wants Billy on staff when they play Mississippi State, if I had to guess. All right, who else is on the panic meter?
Mike, we got to go back to Arkansas, and let's talk about the defense. These numbers are not safe for work, my friend. 127th in rush defense success rate. They've allowed 5 plays of 40 plus yards. Shout out to Quincy Rhodes, by the way. The defensive lineman for Arkansas is playing well this year. Deserves a lot more credit probably than he's getting. But third down defense, red zone defense, all an issue here. And the unfortunate part for Arkansas is this is wasting a potentially dynamic offense. I mean, this offense for Arkansas is averaging 8 yards a play. Taylen Green is 4th in ESPN's quarterback rating to start the season. They are wasting a prolific offense that should be good enough to be a top 25 team. They are literally 2 plays away from being 4-0 and in the top 25. And because they cannot get a stop or two on defense, and granted, some of this is offensive turnovers, but there is so much pressure, as you summed it up well earlier. They've got to score every time they touch the ball, and the defensive issues are just wasting Taylen Green and this offense this season.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I mean, it seems like the fans are more and more checked out, and you know, it's not helping the ADs coming out here and saying we can't compete in football. We can compete in the other sports, but not in football. So, man, I think Arkansas needs to fire their AD, and they probably need to let go of Sam Pittman as well. So it's a whole clean sweep there, in my opinion, is necessary. But they also got that crazy Sam Pittman. I've said it on last night's show. Anybody missed it? He's got a unique contract where it's starting in the 2021 season, so his second season. If Sam Pittman has a losing record, his buyout the figure drops by $3 million. He currently has a winning record, I think he's 29-26 since the 2021 season. So Arkansas, I think what they're doing is they're holding on to Sam Pittman and see if he loses 4 more, and all 4, the next 4, they're going to be underdogs in. I'm not saying they're going to lose them all, but I think if they do, I think they'll release or relieve Sam Pittman of his duties. Do you think that's a fair assessment?
I think that's fair. I think the second bye week is November 8th before you play LSU, Texas, and Missouri. Probably going to be an underdog in all of those. And if you're sitting there at that point out of bowl contention or just trying to get to 6-6, I think you would have said you gave Sam Pittman all of the chances that he could. Also, and this is also true, I think, with Oklahoma State and what they've got going on with Mike Gundy now, it wouldn't totally surprise me if there's some sort of kind of graceful way to do this, to maybe, I mean, maybe I'm wrong here, but I think there could be like a way to sort of like going to part ways, not necessarily a firing, to sort of to kind of push Sam Pittman out the door. Because like you said, Mike, I mean, one of my favorite coaches to cover, but at the same time, I'm seeing more and more of these Arkansas fans just kind of checked out, and it's hard to blame them. I mean, look at the schedule the rest of the way. It's a great schedule to watch as a fan, but at the same time, I mean, there's just not a lot of wins on the slate, and especially when you keep having the same thing happen where you get so close and then you fall short due to one or two plays at the end.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, of course, Arkansas fans are well aware, but for the rest, Sam Pittman is 7-19 in one score games as Arkansas head coach. And I don't even think we referenced this, Stephen, but Memphis was down 18. That was to date. That's the largest comeback allowed of any team in college football this season. So, man, that was a rough loss in more ways than one. You know what?
Especially with a team, as you mentioned, that was probably way more one-dimensional. They should have been able to go into Memphis and win that game. Memphis is a very good G5 team. They've had a good track record the last couple of years. I do not think they are as good as they were last year when they had double-digit wins. So they should have been able, as an SEC front, to be able to control that run game and take care of business on the road.
Hey, Kyle G's got a solution here, Stephen. Sam Pittman, offensive line coach at South Carolina. Billy Napier, offensive coordinator. Just get the gang back together down in Columbia.
Oh, man, while we're at it, let's get Ed Orgeron to be defensive line coach, maybe Jimbo to coach quarterbacks, too. Do you remember maybe Napier was kind of one of the coaches that came up when Mississippi State was looking for a coach a couple times, right, when he was at Louisiana? Probably happy they got Levy right now, right?
All right, anybody else on the panic meter, Steven?
Mike, let's go to South Carolina. Let's talk bowl game. Can South Carolina get to a bowl game this season? And I'm looking at their schedule, and I'm starting to get a little worried, Mike. Sitting here at 2-2, 0-2 in the SEC, this was supposed to be the easy part of the schedule. And they get Kentucky coming up, they get Coastal, they get Clemson. I think they can win those three games. If you get the Lenore Sellers that you saw on Saturday, plus maybe some help from the run game, this team improves. I can see 6 wins here. But I'm going to set their panic meter at 6 at missing a bowl game. Is that too high?
I don't think so. And I think it goes to 10 if we lose to Kentucky. So, yeah, I mean, this is just a paramount game. And the problem is it's also a paramount game for Kentucky as well. And they'll have 2 weeks to prepare for it. And they can run the football. And that is something that South Carolina apparently is incapable of preventing, is an opponent running on you. So this is a tricky, tricky matchup, I think, going into this Kentucky game. I think it's more than fair to be concerned, but they're another one where they got in a hole like this last year and they were able to crawl their way out of it and turn into one of the hottest teams in the country. I think we've got to figure out how to get the most out of Lenore Sellers and why he's regressed. And is it the offensive line? Is it the coordinator? Is it the weapons? I don't know, but they need to figure that out and figure it out in a hurry, because he was dialed in for about the second quarter against Missouri. He looked like $1 million, and then they went right back in the tank again. So they've got to get this situated, and they got to fix it in a hurry.
100%. And I think there is a scenario where Sellers could be good enough to carry this team to 6 wins, and it might just go be Beamer just putting the season on his back and just saying, look, we can't manufacture a run game. It's on you. And I think there is a scenario where that could pick off an upset somewhere along the way, especially at home. As good as South Carolina can play at home and at night, maybe you sneak a win against Oklahoma or Alabama. But I think right now, even though this team has improved in the second half of the season under Beamer, it's kind of hard for me to see this offensive line getting drastically better during the season. A lot of the times with these offensive lines, you kind of have what you have once you get to week five or week six or so. So I think it's going to require an upset, and that path gets a lot harder to bowl eligibility if they lose to Kentucky. This is one of the most winnable games on the schedule, and it's still winnable, even though, like you said, I think Kentucky's running game is suddenly a greater concern after what happened with Missouri on Saturday.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, no doubt. All right, anyone else on the panic meter?
Mike, we got another team, and then we got a bonus here for the good cousins. Let's go to Ole Miss, and we are going to talk Lane Kiffin's quarterback decision. Lane Kiffin's probably sweating right now, and we're setting the panic meter at 6. Who do you start? It's a good problem to have. Trinidad Chambliss or Austin Simmons? So I think there's some panic here for Lane Kiffin, trying to make sure you push the right buttons going into a showdown against LSU. You've got two proven quarterbacks. Who do you go with? This is a very big decision for Ole Miss this week.
Yeah, and I posed it to Chris Marler like this. Steven, I'm curious to know what you think. So he is all in on Chambliss. Says you can't sit him. He's too hot right now. You know, the offense is clicking. He seems to be running it highly efficiently, which I agree with all that. But is this the guy to get you over the top? And what I mean by that is compete for championships, make the college football playoff. Now, based on the last 2 weeks, maybe he is. But Kiffin and company, I mean, it's so funny, Steven, how quickly these fans turned their back on all. My God, they were telling me he's the greatest quarterback that's ever lived, and now he's out of the lineup for 2 weeks. He can't play. You know what I mean? Like, I think Austin Simmons with his ceiling, that's what you have to have to beat Georgia. To win a duel, perhaps, with John Mateer in Oklahoma. To reach the heights of heights, I think you need it to be Austin Simmons, but that doesn't mean you rush him on the field. I'm not suggesting that, but what is the problem with DJ Lagway right now, Steven? He's not gotten the reps. We can't just click our fingers and Austin Simmons is $1 million. We've already started to see he's got some issues that he needs experience. He needs to play, so I think if he's ready to go, if he's available to go, which I don't, quite honestly, I don't know, and I would kind of doubt that he is 100% for LSU, but if he is, I think you got to play Austin Simmons. What's your thoughts on that?
I think the health of Austin Simmons actually kind of gives Lane Kiffin a little bit of an easy decision here, because I don't think you want to put Austin Simmons out there if he's not 100%, especially against LSU's front. Because that's going to be a hard matchup for Ole Miss's offensive line to begin with. But if you're dealing with a quarterback who can't move as well as he needs to, then I think that's a real problem. So I think that kind of gives Ole Miss a little bit of an out here. So I think for this Saturday, if I'm Lane Kiffin, I'm keeping LSU guessing quite a bit. Like, you're not committing to Chambliss, you're not committing to Simmons, make them prepare for both. I think you ride the hot hand this week. I think you go with Chambliss, you get an off week, and you get Washington State coming up after this. And I agree with you. I think if Ole Miss wants to be a SEC contender, if they want to win some games in the playoff, to me, it's Austin Simmons. I think his talent, his ceiling is significantly higher. I've been very impressed with Chambliss as a transfer from Ferris State, being able to come in and produce these kind of numbers. You know, another way of looking at this is too, Arkansas's defense is pretty bad. Tulane's defense, a lot of new pieces. They shut down Northwestern. Northwestern's offense is pretty bad. Duke had some problems. You know, is Duke still kind of working through some offensive problems early in the season? And their starting quarterback was at Tulane last year. So they kind of knew strengths and weaknesses there. I say all that to say Tulane and Arkansas probably aren't your toughest test. Like, LSU will be a much tougher test and a much more kind of guiding kind of data point for us in this decision. So I guess kind of a long way of saying, I think when Simmons is healthy, he's my guy, but I would ride Chambliss this week, especially against LSU.
Mm-hmm. Well, I think that's a perfect place, Steven, to look ahead to the week that is. And what an epic week. Separation Saturday, I'm calling it. Always got to get it with a hokey name here, Steven. But let's focus on Alabama, of course, at Georgia. What an epic showdown this could be. And, man, last year was an all-time classic. Didn't quite matter in terms of what we thought. You know, we were saying, well, are they going to face twice? Are they going to face three times? No, it was just the one time. But it was an all-time classic. What's your thoughts heading into Georgia, Alabama?
Mike, that is exactly where I wanted to go, which is all-time classic. And I hope this year's game comes down to the final play, final possession, whatever you want to name it. I mean, that was a thriller, and let's hope we get another great one this year. I think my first question in this game goes to Alabama, which is we saw them lose to Florida State, but they have looked a lot better since then. I don't think Louisiana Monroe is all that great, and certainly don't think Wisconsin's all that good either. So this is a pretty significant step up in competition. But what Alabama has been able to do is Ty Simpson has been absolutely locked in. And we see this with the throws he made a couple of weeks ago to Ryan Williams and Bernard. It's almost like he couldn't miss. And now he's getting a Georgia secondary that also had some issues against the pass against Tennessee 2 weeks ago. So I'm interested, what is the growth from Alabama from game one to this game? And then on the Georgia side, what kind of growth are they going to make from that Tennessee game? Because we saw Alabama struggle to stop the run. Here comes Georgia, 55 rushing attempts against Tennessee. Alabama should have some reinforcements with Tim Keenan coming back. But still, this is a line of scrimmage and quarterback test here for both teams.
Yeah, no doubt. And did you see what Kirby said today? Basically, I mean, this guy can't miss. Ball doesn't even hit the ground when he's playing. So, you know, that I think that's old Kirby talking up the opponent like he always does. I mean, oh my God, I don't think we stand a chance. You know what I mean? One of those deals. But he, to an extent, he's right. And now Gunner is starting to heat up. So how big of an edge does he give Georgia in this matchup? He can run, not to the extent of old Florida State Castellanos, whatever the hell his name is, but could be a factor here. Here's another one, though, Stephen. Bama is getting back a lot of guys, running backs, defensive linemen, that are crucial players to their operation. And I think this has been the target date for these guys all along. They wanting to get in there, get into this action. I don't know. This is, and we all know that Alabama is kind of the team that's in Georgia's head. And I really do believe in that. I know a lot of people don't, but those things, I think, trust me, I'm a Tennessee grad. I know all about it, Florida. You know, when a team's in your head, they're in your head. And I think Alabama's in Georgia's heads. I don't think there's any way to question that.
Also, isn't it interesting how this game sets up? I mean, Georgia's favored, and, you know, I don't think there's a lot of people who are going to be giving Alabama. I mean, I know some people will pick Alabama, but I think the consensus is Georgia's probably going to win this game, right?
Oh, yeah. I don't think you're going to see many people picking Alabama.
It's such a shift, you know, like it's for Alabama to be in the spot, to be the underdog, to be able to play that up. I mean, and that's kind of what fascinates me about this Alabama team is it does feel like there's a different attitude from like game one to now. And maybe all that's just talk. And I think it sounds like Kalen DeBoer maybe actually yells at the players occasionally now, and he's a little meaner, whatever they need to do. But it does.
Oh, all that talk got Stephen frazzled again. This is twice today we've had someone freeze out on us. Let's see. Let me see if I can remove him. Son of a... He told me. He said there were storms. All right. Appreciate you. We'll go with Xavier here while we wait for Steven. Does Auburn get to claim another national championship this year due to referee comments? Oh, Giga Maggie, he's not even an Oklahoma fan. So I do appreciate that one, Xavier. No, they do not get to claim it, but they probably will. 9 times out of 10, Hugh Freeze is going to take any excuse he can. And I did listen to Hugh Freeze today. So, you know, we're moving on, moving the page. They got a huge game against Texas A&M coming up here, but I would wonder if they lose to A&M, and I'm not saying they will, because I think they showed on Saturday they can compete in this conference. But I bet if they lost to A&M, they'll come out with some kind of bullshit about how all this kind of affected them. He'll make excuses. Trust me, he'll make excuses. Man. How about this one from Carl? Appreciate you, Carl. Vols giving up 20 points after score out of hand and second, third stringers on defense playing. Yes and no. The last one was kind of bogus. You're right about that. But Tennessee's got a lot of secondary issues. They really do. And I think when you play four games, I think it's fair to start to question this defense. I mean, Syracuse looks better. But, I mean, Georgia went up and down the field on you, including many of the critical plays of the game. So, just something to consider. And I'm also considering that Steven's back in action. What's up, man?
We got some more storms rolling through here. So I guess every time you and I get together for a show, it seems like we have terrible luck with this. So if it goes out again, Mike, you know what's happened. I'm sorry about that.
Yeah, no worries. No worries. But I think we were breaking down this Alabama-Georgia epic showdown. Let me ask you, though, because we were saying, you know, most people will be picking, and I think it's fair, they'll be picking Georgia. But if it's Alabama, let's say Alabama goes into Athens, Stephen, and beats them, what does that do for the perception of this Alabama team in terms of can they win the SEC? Can they win the national championship? I was on that train preseason. I looked like a dumbass after week one, but maybe they can win some of that support if they win in Athens. What's your thoughts on that?
Mike, you won't look like an idiot if they go into Georgia and win, because I feel pretty confident in saying if Alabama wins this game, I think the whole conversation changes here and that we have to start considering them back in the mix to make the college football playoff and to be a national championship contender. If you can go on the road and beat a Georgia team that most people have in the top five or six, that's where Alabama will be in next week's rankings. So I think, number one, it would kind of validate that week one was kind of maybe a little bit of a mirage to some extent. They just played really poorly. This is the real Alabama team. And if they can go in there and get a victory, like I said, the whole narrative, the whole conversation changes. It's right back to the preseason being, this is a team that can win potentially the national championship.
Now, what about the other side though? Because this is like a house of horror for Georgia. Just won an epic showdown in Neyland Stadium. Could this be an opportunity for Georgia to really kind of like exercise the demon, so to speak, Stephen, and just absolutely steamroll Alabama and let them know, hey, this is a new era in the SEC. And of course, I literally like word for word said that last year. I thought they were going to roll into Alabama and whoop them. But, you know, is this an opportunity for Georgia to kind of set the tone and let everybody that maybe is still wondering who's the top dog, pun intended, in the SEC, that it is Georgia?
Yeah, I think that's a great point, Mike, because I think we learned a lot about Georgia and Gunnar Stockton 2 weeks ago when they played Tennessee. But I still think like there's an opportunity for Georgia to get a lot better from here as well. I mean, Stockton can play better. Think about the offensive line. Think about all the young pieces they have on defense. So if this game's not closed,
oh, buddy, we lost him again, I think. Damn storms. These damn Middle Tennessee storms. I can't deal with them today. Or maybe Steven's just really trying to emphasize the point that he's trying to get across here when it comes to how his excitement level for Alabama and Georgia. I don't know. What do you think? What do you think? Look at that frozen son of a gun there. Cliffhanger. We could do like Marler. I had Marler on speakerphone last time for anybody that missed it. Oh, there he goes again. All right. Got to wait till next season to find out what happened on that SEC pause. I don't think it's crazy, though. I really don't think it's crazy to suggest that Alabama goes in there and beats them. Now, if it's week one, Bama, yeah, they're getting cooked. But I don't know. Bama keeps getting better week in and week out. I know the competition's lacking, but they look like a machine. It's one thing to just blow people out. It's another to look nearly flawless like Alabama has the last couple weeks. And speaking of flawless, our flawless friend Steven Lassen.
NIL deals accepted on internet, Mike.
You left us on a cliffhanger talking about how good Georgia could be.
I think if they, you know, for all the talk about all these other teams in the country as national championship contenders, and I mean, you run down the list, everybody's like Ohio State, Penn State, Oregon. I think it kind of be like, oh, yeah, don't forget about Georgia, right? They're still pretty good. And I think that conversation kind of started after Tennessee. But I think if they take care of business against Alabama, I think we're having that conversation. We're saying, hey, this Georgia team's got a – they have a lot of young pieces, and they're only going to get better from here. They've already beaten Tennessee. They beat Alabama. They get Texas at home. All of a sudden, it's like the national championship picture starts to clear, and Kirby kind of reminds everyone that, hey – this national championship path still goes through Athens. And if they take care of business against Alabama, that's only going to get louder.
All right. How about this one, Steven? I believe this is the only matchup of undefeateds here in the SEC. LSU at Ole Miss here. What a game. What a game this has been, Steven. The last couple years gone down to the wire. Ole Miss wins at home. LSU wins at home. This one's in Oxford. Advantage Ole Miss. I don't know. What do you think?
Mike, I don't know what to make of this game yet. And I think what's fascinating to me is kind of the recent series history. You think about how crazy that that game was 2 years ago in Oxford. Last year's game, of course, was crazy ending as well. One of the reasons that Ole Miss missed the playoff was that loss to LSU. But I'm also thinking about LSU and thinking about what we've seen from Clemson since the season opener. And Clemson has not played well, offense and defense. And I don't think LSU played up to its potential. And we saw this last week. Nussmeier getting going. Yes, it was Southeastern Louisiana, but it was good to see. It was good to see the offense put up some points, see Nussmeier kind of look like himself. So I think looking at how the season has progressed, I think LSU's offense is certainly better than we saw in the opener. But here they go on the road to play a good Ole Miss team. What does LSU's defense do against either Chambliss or Simmons? Like, there's a lot of interesting battles here. And, you know, looking at the way that Ole Miss, from a defensive perspective, has played this year, you know, they have had trouble at times stopping the run. Caden Durham is banged up for LSU. Can they manufacture some help around Garrett Nussmeier? So I think, given that the last two games in this series were decided by one score, and the setup for this one feels like a four-quarter game where either we learn a lot about LSU and everything we said after the Clemson game is true, or Ole Miss wins here. And all of a sudden, Ole Miss is a top 25 team or top 10 team coming out of week five.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, a lot on the line. Do you think LSU's defense really is elite, like they kind of look like at times, or – is that a product of, like you were saying, maybe not playing the greatest competition?
I still think this is an elite defense. I think the question is, are they like top three or top 10 nationally, essentially? Right now, I'd probably put them – I thought they were maybe like top three after that Clemson game. I'm kind of backing off of that just a little bit just because Clemson has not played that well, and I have my doubts about how good they are now. So I've kind of backed off, but this game will tell us a lot. Like, if they go into Oxford and they take care of business and they hold the Ole Miss offense in check, I think it kind of validates that, yeah, everything you saw in the opener was true. It's just that maybe Clemson quit after they lost to Georgia Tech in the game against Syracuse. This one you just throw out when evaluating Clemson.
Let me ask you this. Would you agree that I have Lane Kiffin as a better coach than Brian Kelly? It's just my opinion. Would you agree or disagree with that?
Man, that's a good question. I think if I gave you my SEC coach rankings, I probably had Kelly ahead of Kiffin. but I think they probably were back to back. So it's a bad answer for you, but they're probably like neck and neck in my book. Okay. But I don't know. I mean, maybe you give Kiffin a little bit of an edge here because number one, it's at home. Number two, he's kind of mastered the portal things a little quicker than Brian Kelly has. I certainly like what he's done as the staff, you know, bringing in Pete Golding to fix that side of the ball. It seems like he's been faster to adapt to the changing trends of college football more so than Brian Kelly. Is that fair?
I think it is. And to my knowledge, Lane Kiffin's never harmed a water bottle.
No.
Well, no, that was the table, wasn't it? He was pounding on the table.
Yeah, that water bottle got harmed, though. He's never yelled at a reporter at the first question, right?
Not that I'm aware of, but I'm sure it is. It has happened. All right, hey, how about this matchup, Stephen? Another great one here, I think. Auburn, Texas A&M in College Station. Again, 2 weeks to prepare for the Aggies. Auburn coming off a tough loss on the road. What's your early read on this one?
Mike, I think the first thing that jumps out to me is the kind of what happened last week. And Texas A&M had an off week after beating Notre Dame. Auburn coming off the loss to Oklahoma. So, you know, Texas A&M from just the setup is in a better spot. It's at home. They have 2 weeks to get ready. They also had 2 weeks to quickly forget about the Notre Dame victory. So I think a lot of the intangibles favor Texas A&M here. Also, man, what a great matchup if you like receivers. Concepcion, Craver, Coleman, Singleton, four of the SEC's top receivers on the field for this game. I mean, it's the individual battles with the secondary are going to be fun. But I think if you're just thinking about Auburn here, the schedule at Oklahoma, Texas A&M, and then Georgia, a kind of season defining stretch potentially, where if you're Texas A&M, you're looking at this as we get Auburn at home, a chance to get revenge for last season's close loss. And we've now had 2 weeks to kind of put aside what happened against Notre Dame and continue to build on that. This is a really kind of promising stretch here for Texas A&M and what's coming up with their schedule.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And I, you know, this is going to be, man, this is like an old school SEC West battle. Mike Elko, Hugh Freeze. That's another one that I kind of struggled with. Who do you think is a better head coach between Elko and Freeze? Freeze got a longer track record in this conference. Elko, much shorter overall, even as a head coach. But, you know, I think I lean Elko a little based on his 2 years there in A&M. But where would you be at with that question?
I would take Elko, I think. I think a lot of questions about Hugh Freeze this season and where exactly Auburn was. And I think some of them have been answered. They clearly look like a better team. But Texas A&M also looks like a better team to me. And I think everything we kind of thought when he was hired, sort of like program development, getting the most out of the defense, still is a task they have to address. But they made the right adjustments on offense this offseason, it looks like so far.
Mm-hmm. All right. How about this one, Steven? Tennessee at Mississippi State. Mississippi State, if I were to tell you there was an undefeated team in this matchup, you might say Mississippi State, given their schedule. But I think most people would probably have said Tennessee coming off a college football playoff appearance. But, you know, this is an opportunity for Mississippi State to legitimize itself in conference play. They've done more than that in the non-conference. But huge showdown here. Tennessee has been known to fall short in conference games on the road unexpectedly. What's your early read on this one?
I think you nailed it, Mike. I think intrigue for Mississippi State, because the win over Arizona State was great, but Tennessee's a top, you know, 15, top 20 team right now, depending on which poll that you look at. So it's a much more difficult assignment to beat Tennessee than it is Arizona State. But Mississippi State's already checked off one box by beating Arizona State. They can do it against Tennessee. They can move to 5-0. They'd be ranked next week if that happens. Also, I think this is one of the reasons, and one of the reasons I'm so excited about a 9-game slate is Tennessee has not played in Starkville since 2012. They've only played two times since 2013. So rotating through these opponents and locations is going to be significantly better under the new schedule. Like what we've seen out of Mississippi State's defense so far. But Tennessee's offense is a much more difficult and balanced attack. Like Arizona State wasn't a few weeks ago. Tennessee's is as well. And so I think Aguilar versus Chapin, Tennessee's defense also under a little bit of stress with some of the missing pieces. There's a lot of intrigue for me because either Tennessee goes in there, they sort of answer some of those road questions, or Mississippi State wins, and we're talking about 5-0 and ranked Mississippi State next week.
Mm-hmm. What about the other conference matchup? We hit on it a little bit already, but Kentucky at South Carolina. Got any early read on that one?
Mike, I think it kind of goes back to with South Carolina, must win, kind of backs against the wall after consecutive losses. And I think with Kentucky having 2 weeks to get ready, and also they match up, like being able to run the ball. If they can do some of the similar things that Missouri did, they can turn this into a four-quarter game. But the off week might have been beneficial just because they've had 2 weeks to give Boley all the reps as the number one. They can work on everything from Eastern Michigan, give him a chance to kind of grow into the starting job. So fascinated to see if South Carolina can continue some of that offensive momentum they had against Missouri, or does Kentucky just simply run the ball? They keep this game close and steal the Sunglasses Bowl from South Carolina.
Man, they steal the sunglasses off Beamer's face. He's going to be so mad and red. And good Lord, I hope the Gatorade container is protected, because Beamer's going to be kicking the heck out of that thing on Saturday if they lose to Kentucky. You know what?
Absolutely. I mean, we know Mark Stoops is motivated. Here he is, one of his biggest rivals, right?
All right. How about we talk a lot about him on the panic meter, but we got Arkansas hosting Notre Dame. Big game here, or what was supposed to be a big game for the Razorbacks. Could Sam Pittman get back some goodwill here, Stephen?
Absolutely. I think this, for all that has gone wrong for Arkansas, Notre Dame is kind of walking into the situation with a lot of questions. Defensively, nowhere near the Notre Dame defense that we thought we would see in the preseason. They have been struggling at times on the ground. They struggle to get a pass rush. They struggle in the secondary. They could be without their top cornerback, Leonard Moore, who was the first team preseason All-America candidate this year. So a defense that's already struggling gets Taylen Green in a red hot Arkansas offense. I think the problem for Arkansas is going to be still on the other side of the ball. Notre Dame's quarterback, CJ Carr, he's made 3 starts in his career. He's getting better with every game. Also, Jeremiah Love and Jadarian Price ran all over Purdue last week. Offensive line and run games starting to come in for Notre Dame after struggling against Miami. So I think that's kind of the challenge here for Arkansas, is can they stop Notre Dame's rushing attack? And if it is kind of a higher scoring game, you're probably going to rely on Taylen Green in this offense to score pretty much every time you touch the ball. But saying all that, Mike, Arkansas gets them at home. They got Taylen Green. They can score against a struggling Notre Dame defense. For all that's gone wrong for Arkansas, this is a chance to steal a victory here.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's just unfortunate it's not a night game. That could have helped, but
yeah,
who knows? All right, how about any thoughts on Vanderbilt and Utah State? We got to see Utah State a little bit against A&M, so that's kind of interesting that SEC fans will see a little bit. See Utah State twice, but the way Vanderbilt's cooking shouldn't be much of a test.
Absolutely, Mike. I think Vanderbilt now up to 4th in the nation in offensive success rate. I mean, just a machine right now on offense, winning every game by 20 plus points. I mean, this is a pretty impressive start for Vanderbilt. I don't think they'll have a ton of stress on Saturday. Utah State is 3-1. They beat Air Force 2 weeks ago, which was a nice win. They are putting up about 37 points a game offensively. They're better than Georgia State, but I don't think Vanderbilt will have much trouble. I think what's coming, though, for Vanderbilt is I think 6 of their next 7 opponents are ranked after this game against Utah State. So important for Clark Lee to get the victory here, get the bench some more work, and get ready for a very difficult trip to Tuscaloosa coming up.
Mm-hmm. And then final one here, Stephen, UMass. I thought they were in the SEC after last year, traveling to red-hot Mizzou. Mizzou's nearly a 45-point favorite.
Should be an easy win for Missouri. Mike, let me just give you one number on UMass, and that is 0. That's how many touchdown passes they've thrown this year. They are 136 out of 136 in my power ratings this season. They lost to Bryant a few weeks ago, an FCS team. Should be an easy win. Ahmad Hardy's going to rack up some missed tackles. Prabula should have an easy day. Missouri will cruise to 5-0.
Yeah, so I'm glad you went there, because I was basically the only question I have, over under 175 rushing yards for Ahmad Hardy.
I will go under only because I don't think I would give him much work. I would just empty the bench right away. Keep that guy healthy.
Hey, any thoughts on the schedule leak? We don't know if this is official yet, but Chris Lowe on 3 reported this. And shout out our good buddy Chris Marler for making this graphic here. But these are the 3 annual opponents in the 9-game SEC schedule that each team will reportedly have for the next 4 seasons. Any thoughts on this?
Mike, I think the first thing that jumps out to me about this is, you know, the SEC gets it right. Because when we compare the SEC to other conferences, the SEC understands rivalries, tradition, and geography. And so I can kind of quibble with some of these, you know, picks. Like, it is a little weird that Ole Miss and Oklahoma are now an annual game. But and there are some others that are missing, like Alabama and LSU. But I think if you think about the annual opponents now in the context that everybody is going to cycle through the schedule every 2 years or so, you're competitive balance is a thing. Like, they're trying to work that into the schedule. So if your annual opponents are easier, your 6 games are likely to be harder. So I think the SEC gets it right here. I mean, like I said, I can kind of quibble with some of these choices. Some of them don't necessarily make kind of line up with what I had, but I think that the balance and protecting some of those rivalries was important. They did that. And these can also be changed in the future, too. Like, in 3 years, 4 years, they'll evaluate these and see if they hold up, maybe tweak some. I do think the biggest thing that you're going to hear starting next season with a 9-game schedule is the 5 home games and the 4 road games. The splits are going to be very important in terms of, like, preseason rankings and assessing, like, where teams are going to stack up. That's the next thing that we're going to be talking about when it comes to scheduling.
Yeah. And then you're going to have some crazy fans demand, well, Georgia and Florida play a neutral site, Texas, Oklahoma. Everybody should have to, you know what I mean? That's next, but not that that's coming. But I can already, I'm preparing myself for that argument to be made.
College football, and I'll say this, it's perfect that Texas and Oklahoma play in the Cotton Bowl, Florida, Georgia, and Jacksonville. Totally understand it. But as many times as we can get these games on campus, the rest of the games, they got to be. And I say it every year with the playoff, the games are better when they're on campus. We saw it in the first round. It'd be great to get the second round games on campus. So I don't think we'll see too many neutral site games for conferences outside of what we have. We may see them happen in the non-conference portion, perhaps even more than we see now. But my hope is that the schedules are balanced we're getting the rivalries. And then the next thing, like I said, will be those 5-4 splits. Who, you know, as much as the SEC can, I'm sure they're going to try to make it as even as possible, but it is very difficult to, given how crazy deep this conference has become.
Right. All right, Stephen, we're about to hit 90 minutes. So I really appreciate you stopping by, dropping all this knowledge on the cousins. Before you go, can you remind them where to check out your work and how to give you a follow?
Absolutely. Apologize for all the issues with the internet and power tonight. We're still working on here. We're our defense needs a little more time in the off season.
Who's running that? Sam Pittman's defense over here?
Man, I knew it was a bad sign when this guy looked like Chad Morris was hired to run power around here.
Or Billy Napier's offense.
Right. That's right. Yeah. All the cousins can read all my work over at AthlonSports.com. You can also follow me over on Twitter at AthlonSteven and on Facebook and Instagram, StevenLCFB.
All right, and shout out JP for getting us rounded up all the shout outs. Today's shout outs: Junior, Cousin JR, Stephen Up, Austin Wayne, Carl Junkins, Ashley Schaefer, BMW, Michael Raleigh, Mr. Sip, and Xavier. Thank you all, and thank you, JP, for working that up. We'll be back tomorrow, Roush Hour, in the middle of the day. Not sure the time yet, probably 10 to 2, around there. And then Cousin Shane, 7 o'clock Eastern, 6 Central, to. I thought we were going to do a schedule reveal. I think we've already revealed it. And then preview these upcoming games. So until then, we appreciate each and every one of you, and we'll catch you on the next one.
Hey, buddy. This beer's for you, Mike, and Cousin Shane. That SEC podcast loves the pirate, and the pirate loves that SEC podcast. Hail State.